Joining me on this edition of Doc Talk is our newest orthopedic surgeon over at Peace Harbor Medical Center, Dr. Michael Thomas. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, George. Thank
good.
You
Good. I like the purple tie. It's really good.
Thank you so much.
And some skull on there. Or is that
it's a skull and crossbones.
I was wondering, yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of works well with the doctor theme, doesn't it?
It does. Usually I wear it post-call, but...
how does it work with the patients?
Well, it's funny. I'll usually know who's really attentive by who notices the tie. Usually a couple of people.
Yeah.
Now I've let that secret out, though, so everyone's going to mention it.
Everyone's going to start looking at it.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me, by the way.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It depends on whether they see it pre-surgery or post-surgery.
That is true.
Pre-surgery, they might, you know,
a little swashbuckling, maybe.
So let's start off. Well, I like to start off with finding out a little bit about you, a little bit about your background. You know, originally, where are you from?
Well, I wish I had a more exotic story, but I actually hail from Washington State, so not too far away.
Well, at least you didn't say California.
That's true. That's true. Western Washington, and so I'm used to the rain. I have web feet just like everyone else.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. That's
right. So you grew up there, went to school there.
Yeah.
What about med school?
Med school back in Chicago, so back in the Midwest. Lovely place to visit.
Yeah. Kind of windy there. Well, it kind of emulates this kind of place, doesn't it?
It is. Not as mild and kind of easy throughout the year. It's a little bit cold in the winter and a little bit hot in the summer for someone from this part of the woods.
So in high school, or maybe before that, did you have this inkling? I mean, were you good with science? Were you just wanted to help people? What was the impetus for going this direction?
Well, I think as far as getting involved in medicine, it is an area going through school, science sort of gravitated in that area. And then as far as once you get into medicine and into medical school and see which areas that you like, I kind of like the surgical sort of field. I'd like to think that I'm kind of handy with my hands and I like to fix things. And I've always sort of done that. And to be able to combine that with what you like to do, and it sounded like a pretty good match.
So why Florence?
Florence, it's interesting. Growing up in sort of outside of Seattle, we used to actually come to the Oregon coast every summer to vacation. So when I heard about the opportunity opening up down here, I thought, wow, that would be wonderful to actually work in a place that you'd rather vacation in. Most of the country would rather vacation here. Yeah.
Most of the mornings I wake up, and if I'm walking on the dock or something, I say to myself, or sometimes out loud or sometimes on Facebook Live, I'll say, I live here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly. You got to pinch yourself every once in a while.
Every now and then.
Especially a day like today. Yeah, wonderful.
It is a gorgeous day. So now, from Chicago, the Midwest, out to Washington State, where did you practice medicine in Washington State?
Well, I mostly practiced in Western Washington for just about 20 years, last 20 years.
Orthopedics, that covers like pretty wide range of stuff, doesn't it? I mean, you're just mostly joints?
No, and that's one thing I like about orthopedics is a wide variety of types of patients, ages of patients, different areas of the body. It's to have a practice to be able to deal with a different area of the body, a different problem, different challenges.
If you're a heart surgeon, you're always looking at the heart every time. It's always the same thing. At least now you got a shoulder, you got an elbow.
Right. So it's interesting to be able to, just not stay with one sort of area of the musculoskeletal system.
All right. Well, I think that's one of the most interesting parts of it because there are so many makeups. There's so many things that tie a shoulder together, that tie a knee together, you know, and you've got to be able to work all through that. And I imagine that's, like you said earlier, you're good with your hands. So you have to, I just imagine it's because there's a lot of tendons, muscles, and all that stuff, right? Is that?
That's correct. And sometimes we do literally have to tie things together when they become untied. And so it brings different parts of the body, different challenges. I just find that that aspect just very interesting to be able to one case to be working on an ankle, another case to be working on a shoulder, and followed by a hip and maybe a knee. That would be a lovely day in the OR for me.
So did your schooling have to encompass all of those things in order for you to get out and get into practice? Or is that something through residency, or how does that work? Because, I mean, if you're working on a specific modality or whatever the term would be, but yet you have to know all the different joints, Does that something that comes through your residency, or is that something you learn in school first?
Well, you learn the basics in school, but what you learn in residency is putting sort of the basics together, and then fine-tuning and focusing on what you're going to actually be doing in that field that you're going to practice medicine in. And for orthopedics, usually in medical school, your typical orthopedic surgeon is probably someone who is quite interested and fascinated by anatomy. And within the anatomy, the musculoskeletal system with the joints and the tendons and the nerves and that sort of a breakdown. That's what holds interest usually for the orthopods.
Now, have you done any emergency medicine in conjunction with that, or is it just strictly like scheduled surgeries and things like that?
Oh, no. Usually with orthopedics, there's usually a large component of your practice that involves emergencies. Unfortunately, people will fall down and break things, or they're maybe off riding in the dunes and things don't go as anticipated. And so that's usually a significant part of your typical practice.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Michael Thomas on this Doc Talk, and we'll come back in just a moment after a few words from Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. I'm speaking with Dr. Michael Thomas. He is the latest addition to Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center in the orthopedic surgeon area, for sure. And let's talk about specifics. I mean, obviously, there is an aging population here, so I'm sure that you deal some with the aging population versus maybe sports medicine kind of thing. So talk about a little bit about some of the most common things that you're involved with on a daily basis.
Well, I really do like seeing all types of patients, all ages of patients, and certainly the age and type of patients here in Florence ranges quite a bit. I like to tell people I like my orthopedics like my chicken. No backs, no necks. Everything else is just fine. Mm. And so we may be seeing patients with ankle issues, knee issues, hip issues, shoulder issues. We do see a lot of patients with knee arthritis and with hip arthritis. And so total joint arthroplasty is a very common procedure in our practice.
I have a friend, actually fairly young. She's a model in her mid-40s and needs both hips replaced. And she wasn't really an active thing, so I don't know if it's something hereditary or something, you know, degenerative in there. How often does something like that come up in younger patients where you see maybe more problematic issues with a hip that you don't normally see in a younger? What are some of the things that...
Mm-hmm. With that age range, more than likely, there's a genetic component. She probably has a history in her family background of arthritis. I would not be surprised to hear that. Or sometimes with younger patients, there'll be a history of some trauma. Perhaps they were in a car accident and down the road after that, after they've long since recovered, they've developed arthritis in those joints that might have been injured at that time. The typical patient who gets osteoarthritis and requires a typical knee replacement or hip replacement usually is a little older age population than your friend. And again, the genetics play a role, and also what they perhaps do with their knees and their hips throughout their life. Sometimes people will lead a very active lifestyle and not require any type of a replacement procedure, and other people may not necessarily have extremely active lifestyle, but still their hips and knees wear out.
See, I didn't have a real active lifestyle as a kid. But I've started running in later years, and I always tell everybody, I said, look, I've saved my joints for now so I can do the things now that I couldn't do then. I mean, I go skiing, I go running, all stuff, you know, and so I tell everybody that I saved my joints for later on.
That's an interesting perspective.
I know it doesn't work.
No, not necessarily. No? Not necessarily. Good. But perhaps you ought to thank your parents for giving you some good genes.
I think that happens too. Yeah, we do have some of that going on there. When you look at things like arthritis in the joints and stuff like that, is there ever an opportunity to like cull some of the bone as opposed to having to replace it or because I know sometimes arthritis will cause spurs, right? Mm-hmm. They cause spurs mm-hmm. on the bones yeah. and in the joints. Can that be something that can be removed or polished off or something? Or is that just not a normal thing?
Well, before joint replacements were common, there were surgical procedures to do just that, to essentially smooth the joint out, taking out bone spurs. Unfortunately, for some of your larger weight-bearing joints like knees and hips, it's not really as effective. And so
because you have to do so much work on it that it probably weakens or
well,
somehow.
Yes, but it's also the spurs are really more a result of the process. And so it's the body's reaction to not being able to put down more new joint surface. And so it's not the most effective strategy, unfortunately, for getting the function back in that joint again.
We've heard a lot, I guess, over time about, you know, diet and exercise and exercise strengthening bones and stuff like that. Does that work the same with joints and things like that? Or is that if something's damaged, it's pretty much got to be dealt with?
Well, you certainly want to use it or lose it. And and so you definitely don't want to favor those joints. But you want to do it in a way that isn't going to promote wear and tear. And so moving your hips, moving your knees with exercise, there are certain forms of exercise that might be more beneficial. And then conversely, there might be certain forms that you might want to stay away from, particularly if you're at risk for developing arthritis or have some early arthritis already underway.
So what are the let's go to knee replacement. What are the different types of knee replacements surgeries that you might do? I mean, obviously there's a what they call a total knee, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then there's half knee replacements, partial knee replacements.
Really, so what's a partial knee replacement? What main components are we talking with there?
Well, we're talking usually about resurfacing the end of the femur bone and the top part of the tibia bone. And if it's a partial replacement, we sometimes will divide the knee into parts, an inside part and an outside part. And sometimes the arthritis tends to settle in one particular area or not. And if that's the case and the rest of the joint is well preserved, then that patient might be a candidate for a partial knee replacement. It's probably more common, however, to when the joint wears out, that it wears out in the entire joint. And so it's not common that you would have just arthritis in one particular limited area. However, when you do, those type of procedures do come in handy.
So maybe I didn't realize this, but outside of a traumatic injury like a car accident or that, mm-hmm. is arthritis one of the main reasons for having to do hip and knee replacements?
Yeah, I would say that's the main cause and the main reason. Post-traumatic arthritis is a lot less common, although people may have a combination of the two. You might have a predisposition to get arthritis, and perhaps you've had some athletic injuries earlier on in life, and the combination of the two may promote that arthritis setting in at an earlier age than most.
So I got to ask you probably the silliest question you'll hear today, or maybe not. Who knows? Popping your knuckles. I mean, I
think you should always listen to your grandmother in that situation and just don't do it. It just seems wrong. But I don't have a good answer. Have a good answer for why you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
No,
I always heard, you do that, you'll get arthritis.
And it can't be good. Yeah. It can't be good.
I guess I should stop doing it then. I've done it all my life. But I always wondered about that. You know, it's like, well, what does it do? There? So arthritis is one of the main reasons, obviously traumatic injury, you know, accident or rebuilding and stuff like that. Is that something that you guys can do there at Peace Health Peace Harbor, like a rebuild of a hip, or is that depends on the damage done?
Yeah, well, when we're replacing a hip, we really are reconstructing the joint. Are able to take out the damaged parts and replace them with parts that hopefully will last the patient as long as they need. And that, again, is kind of the fascinating part of those surgeries that I particularly find interesting. Every case is just a little bit different. And so it's kind of fun to solve whatever problem that needs to be solved.
I'm speaking with Dr. Michael Thomas at Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center, orthopedic surgeon there, and we'll be back with one more segment here on Doc Talk. Welcome back to Doc Talk. We have Dr. Michael Thomas here, the orthopedic surgeon, Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center, and sometimes I go off book, Doc, and ask questions that I'm just curious about, because I figure, well, you know, if I'm curious about it, maybe somebody else is curious about it. I have an elderly friend. I won't, of course, no names mentioned, but in his 80s, he has a wife that's in her late 70s, early 80s, too. Now, they both had knee replacements. He does not have any feeling in his knees, and she does. Is that something that maybe that's not related at all to the surgery, or is it like one of those, who knows, right?
Well, there could be many explanations for the lack of feeling in the one patient compared to the other. Certainly when one's doing a knee replacement, the way we have to approach the knee and the way we have to go through the skin and the soft tissues to get down to the bone, there are some superficial sensory nerves that need to be transected to get to that. Some patients may experience more of a lack or loss of sensation in certain areas about the knee after that. Those nerves vary a little bit in their distribution, and so some patients may experience more of that than others.
And sometimes maybe it just takes a longer period of time to get that back? Because I know some people do actually get it back.
There may be a permanent loss, but I think in most situations you'll find that it's a transitory loss, and that may be related more to the sensory nerves being stretched in the process of the replacement itself. And if they're still intact, then there's a good chance that that they come back and the sensation is returned.
Do you ever see a point in time in medicine where maybe you can do those joint surgeries without having to open everything up? I know you have some that you can do that way, but I mean,
we're certainly heading in that direction. I think over the years, even the size of the operations and the methods of the operation have changed really dramatically. To get to the point where you no longer need to open the surgical site at all. Oh, I hope that never comes. I'd be out of a job.
Well, just learning to do it a new way, right? Well, I just wondered that because I obviously stem cell research is something totally different. Probably is not to the point where it grows bone, I imagine, yet, or could do an actual replacement of a joint. I mean, there's difference maybe growing a little bit, you know, graft or something there, but growing a whole knee, I guess that would be kind of way too futuristic.
It's an exciting area that they're still finding out about and what the capabilities are. And I think people are still really exploring that. So it's exciting to see that develop and in what direction it eventually turns.
Are there different types of materials for, say, the ball and joint? I mean, or is it pretty much a standard now? Is there a certain...
As far as the artificial joints, like what they're made of? Yeah. Oh, they're all sorts of materials from stainless steel to titanium to ceramic to even just metal, plain metal. The implants vary the type of metal and type of surfaces based on where they need to be, what they need to do.
No polycarbonate, no, as of yet.
Not implanted. Not really.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I would imagine that would be kind of weird to do. Mm-hmm. So metal is still, I mean, obviously.
Different types of metal, too. Yeah. As far as encouraging bony ingrowth, which, say, for our hip prosthesis, which we want to do and we want to encourage, titanium it seems to work really well. The body accepts that, and it has been shown to work well. But the companies are constantly refining and coming up with different forms of metals and alloys that are even showing even more promising function and value.
Does the range of things that a patient can do after surgery kind of depend on prior physical health and age? In other words, I imagine if you do a double knee replacement, somebody who was a runner probably wouldn't be a good idea to say, yeah, you know, wait a few months and get back out there, right?
Well, it definitely the artificial joints are really dependent on their owners to look after them after they've been implanted. There are certain things that people might be advised not to do that might promote increased wear. But it's really amazing the implants and the prosthetic devices that we have these days, how much more people can do than even in the past and how long they last.
I just wonder, you know, you tell a gentleman, say he's 85, he gets a double knee replacement, says, oh, don't go out running, you'll wear him out too soon. And be like, I'm 85, doc, you know, I mean, I don't think I'll need another one before then, but you never know.
Well, it also depends on if the person was an avid runner ahead of time. Sort of like the joke about, doc, can I play the piano after this is done? Yeah. Say, of course you can.
So, that's great.
Well, great. I could never do it before.
Or it hurts when I do that. Well, then don't do that. That's another one. Well, I tell you what, it's been a pleasure. Is there anything that we missed out on? I mean, I guess obviously you get referrals from, you know, the general practitioners and stuff like that for the surgeries. Is that how that works?
Yes. Well, but we also certainly encourage people to call up the office too and self refer if they need to. That's all more dependent on the patient's ability to do that, and if they're able to self-refer, that's wonderful. We also will see people after they've been at the emergency room, and sometimes we'll see patients in that situation and scenario. So we get patients from all different directions and all different ways and means, and we enjoy seeing them all.
All right. 2 months into it, things looking pretty good for you. You enjoying it?
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. This is, again, a wonderful place to live and a wonderful place to work.
I hear, and again, just really quick, I hear from a lot of the folks I've talked to at the hospital, very progressive for this size of community.
It is. It's really what one of the main things that really attracted me here to Florence, the ability to practice in a way and be associated with other people who really enjoy providing that level and quality of care and have that facilitated by the medical group and the hospital.
Dr. Michael Thomas, thank you so much for being on Doc Talk, and look forward to maybe talking with you again sometime.
Thank you, George. I appreciate the opportunity.
You have been listening to Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.